Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we're going to talk about social issues that are worlds apart. One involves the insect world and a social structure that can be useful to us. More in a few minutes. But first, how our society is dealing with a growing movement, LGBT rights. Same-sex marriage was a big step forward in the gay rights movement, but there are still some hurdles to overcome, especially in the area of employment. Since the Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage, we've heard it said a gay couple can marry in the morning and be fired in the afternoon for being gay. The issue may be more complicated for transgender individuals. Joining me in studio is Jessica Liss, attorney and managing shareholder with the St. Louis office of Jackson Lewis. She specializes in employment law. By the way, Jessica has been named to the list of 2016 best lawyers in America. Congratulations for that. Michelle Smith is a Boeing employee and is co-chair of the workplace advocacy organization Out and Equal St. Louis. Michelle began her transition in 2006. A.J. Bockelman is executive director of PROMO, an LGBT advocacy organization. Thank you all so much for being with us. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
I'd like to put the same question to each of you, and I'll start with you, Jessica, on this. How would you evaluate the public response to the LGBT movement or agenda today?
The public response has varied. In looking at this issue through the optic of the employer, it has also varied. It is a complex and evolving issue. I think the good news, the positive news, is that we're making steps in the right direction. While Title VII does not expressly protect the transgender or sexual identity issues, we are seeing a movement in the courts as well as inside employers and the EEOC to recognize this as a protected class. So we are making progress.
For the record, Title VII is what?
Title VII would be the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which most know protects the rights based on the protected classes of race, gender, national origin, religion, etc.
So there is law out there.
There is law that protects gender and discrimination based on sex. There's a seminal case that changed that to support sexual stereotyping that has now extended to transgender discrimination.
Michelle, public acceptance from your point of view.
From my point of view, in general, it's been really good. I do run into places occasionally where people just don't understand why I could do or why I did what I did. Certainly businesses through both Boeing, who has been wonderful in my entire transition and since then, but also through my work with Out and Equal, we get called into businesses all the time to help them with policy writing, and especially in the transgender area, since that's usually the area they haven't looked at yet. In a lot of cases, it's really just getting to know a transgender person. So I tend to spend a lot of time with global diversity people at corporations. I also go to gay straight alliances in the schools so that they have exposure to the fact that being transgender, there really is a place you can move in business and you can really be successful.
And AJ?
I think the greatest narrative here is that it's a story of personal empowerment. It echoes, my answer would echo a little bit of what Michelle said, in that if you go back even 10, 12 years to when we had the marriage amendment vote in 2004, information at that time showed that you only had about 50% of the population who knew someone who identified as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Today, well over 70% of the population knows someone. Each time a family member, an employee, a coworker, a neighbor, someone in your immediate circle comes out, it helps to break down those barriers. And I think that's the strongest thing that people still can continue to do.
What impact has the Caitlyn Jenner story had on all of this? I mean, it's front page news and carried all over the world, and everybody knows that story. What has the impact of that been on this?
Well, I think any time that there's exposure to the issues of transitioning and greater knowledge is brought up about what it means to be transgender, there's an opportunity for education. I think there's also a mixture here that this is a little bit of a celebrity status, and the reality for Caitlyn is a little bit different than what most transgender people experience.
Michelle, how do you look at that?
I think as many people as we can have out on the national stage is great. We're actually very fortunate right now because we have Caitlyn Jenner, we have Laverna Cox, We recently had Chaz Bono, the whole string of individuals that have been out recently have really raised awareness of the transgender community.
But you know, we have to note that a lot of people snickered when Caitlyn Jenner came out, and I wonder, you know, if that was a setback.
I don't believe so. Actually, when I saw the Vanity Fair article, I kind of had the same reaction as a lot of people. The first thing that went through my head is nobody 65 years old looks that good when they transition. but when you actually read the article and you watch what she's been doing since the Vanity Fair article, going to the LGBT Center in L.A. and other things like that, yes, as soon as you get past that first wow value, she really is trying to be a good spokesperson for the LGBT community.
Jessica, Caitlin, helpful to the cause?
Absolutely. Only because, if nothing more, it's creating this conversation. It's opening people's eyes to the issues that affect those like Michelle every day. I can only speak as a fan of the show. It has allowed a greater dialogue in the mainstream, regardless of your likes or dislikes of the show or Caitlin. It's creating a larger forum and opportunity to talk about it.
I have a note that's been posted in front of me here asking about people of color who are transgender. Is it different?
I might let Michelle feel that one, but I would say no.
I mean, definitely all the surveys that people have done show it's much more difficult for a person of color.
Why would that be?
You're the equality person.
Well, I think at the underlying issue here is about the intersectionality. And that's the idea that you have multiple different identities that come into play. And at any point in time, those different identities could experience differing levels of oppression based upon the situations in their lives, whether it be economic situations, employment, access to care, just simply walking down the street and being targeted because you are not dressed in appropriate attire based upon where the neighborhood you're walking through. Different things like that can come into play. And so right now in this country, we've seen a tremendous number of trans people of color in particular targeted and killed. Just in Kansas City, during the summer, we've had two individuals of color who were killed and were misgendered by the police.
Well, law enforcement, I overheard part of a conversation you folks were having in our green room, and one of the things I happened to hear was the issue of law enforcement. I think Jessica, you were making the comment.
Yes.
What kind of an issue is that?
I represent a lot of law enforcement agencies, and it comes down to education. This issue, unfortunately, has not been at the forefront of law enforcement. Officers that I have spoken to recognize and have investigated transgender individuals as victims. However, in a recent example that I experienced related to a Southern Missouri law enforcement official who sought counsel as to whether or not a crime was being committed by a transgender person using the restroom of their sexual identity. And it was an opportunity for me to provide advice and counsel on the legal rights associated with that individual. So it's a necessary component of law enforcement and an opportunity to educate and train at that level. I think they view this issue through the optic of has a crime been committed as opposed to protecting an individual's civil rights.
Michelle, have you had any experience along these lines?
I haven't personally, but I also used to be the president of our local transgender support agency, the St. Louis Gender Foundation, and I know a number of our members have been pulled over for traffic violations, and it really depends on the police officer pulling them over because in a lot of cases, their IDs don't match their presentation, which almost in a large number of people have ended up in the person actually being pulled out of the car and talked to and done things that on a normal traffic stop you just would not see. I'm fortunate all my legal documents match. So if someone were to stop me and I don't get stopped, usually there should be no question.
Jessica, I would think that that'd be the first advice that you would be giving people who have transitioned is to get the documentation set up.
Absolutely. Whether it's law enforcement or from an employer's perspective, anyone can change their legal name, whether it's from Stephen to Stephen, Rebecca to Becky. It is a process through which many people go through, and getting those documents aligned is important. At the same time, you have to be cognizant of the fact that you have emails, you also have personal documents associated with your employment that impact your medical documents and that impact your IRS information as well as your Social Security information. And the timing of which you change those things will have significant impact on work and life.
I would add that it is pretty difficult currently to update your driver's license and birth certificate in this within the state of Missouri to reflect your appropriate gender. It's not simply sending in an updated form. It does take a bit of a process. You have to show a letter from a doctor stating that you have had surgery. Now, some places are interpreting surgery to be something as simple as doing hormones to begin your process of transition. Other places do require a full surgical change. Mm-hmm. And so we, my organization, is working to try to update those situations for individuals.
Right. Go ahead, Michelle.
The actual statute says you need to have one irreversible surgery, however you define one irreversible surgery.
Jessica, where does Missouri stand? And if we can bring Illinois into this part of the district, where does it stand with regard to the law?
Well, with regard to the overarching law of civil rights, we still all maintain the federal protections. Right. However, Missouri does not expressly prohibit or recognize the failure of stereotyping as a theory. However, there are some local ordinances in across Missouri who will recognize sexual stereotyping as well as gender transgender discrimination. So from an employer's perspective, it is so important to understand your state, your federal, and your local laws in order to ensure that you're in compliance.
What about local laws right here in the region we're in now?
Well, I know, for example, the city of St. Louis, I believe, has a ordinance that prohibits sexual orientation.
And gender identity.
So the city has made that an ordinance and law in this area.
St. Louis County also.
Correct. Unincorporated St. Louis County. And then you have a number of the other municipalities, quite a few, but not necessarily all universally.
I want to get into the discussion of employment and the subject that we're really here to talk about today now that we've set all this up. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. With me in studio is Jessica Liss, an attorney with the St. Louis office of Jackson Lewis. Michelle Smith is a Boeing employee and is co-chair of the workplace advocacy organization Out and Equal St. Louis. And A.J. Bockelman is the executive director of Promo. We'll come back, continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Jessica Liss and Michelle Smith and A.J. Bockelman. Jessica, let me start again with you and ask, what is the biggest challenge facing lawyers as they deal with this situation and employees who are transitioning?
Sure. As we talked about before the break, the law is inconsistent. And from an employer's perspective, we work with them to address the uncertainties of these issues within their states as well as their jurisdictions. Ultimately, it comes down to developing and understanding the issues that affect not only the transgender community, but as well as that employee within the employment context. And we counsel employers to work with the employee to recognize that the transition plan that they hopefully have in place before the transition mm-hmm. is effectively executed, and work with the employee as well as coworkers and supervisors to identify the issues that are going to affect that person within that industry. And at the same time, protect the safety, security, privacy, and dignity of the employee while balancing privacy rights of the issues of the employer. And we counsel employers that it's just good business to make these changes and prevent discrimination in the workplace.
I'm assuming more of this counseling is going on today than in the recent past.
It absolutely is. And I'm sure Michelle can attest through her work at Boeing that the larger corporations in St. Louis as well as across the country have these policies in place. It's the smaller regional or local companies that are getting up to speed and identifying that this is an area that needs to be put at the forefront of their anti-discrimination policy.
Michelle, you've been very complimentary of Boeing and the way it handled your situation. What specifically did Boeing do, do you think, that you would point to?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, in 2006, we added transition guidelines after updating our non-discrimination policy to include gender identity. Our transition guidelines took the focus of the transition and put it more on the employee, made it more transitioning employee focus than on the legal EEOC type focus. It's very pretty structured, but somewhat flexible at the same time. We do put a transition plan in place that's agreed to by our global diversity organization, which is the team lead for a transition, and HR and our manager and the employee. And it basically includes everything that we expect the employee to go through, so that everything's basically on the table. When do we think names are changing? When do we think, you know, any surgeries or health things are going to occur? So that everyone up front understands, and we can work it around business needs if necessary. Then probably a strong tenet is our all-employee meeting. And it's basically a meeting with the people that I work with directly without me present, so that it's an open environment to talk. And Boeing basically tells the employees what they expect from a behavior standpoint, and the employees get an opportunity to ask questions. And of course, you know, the bathroom question is usually the first thing that comes up. And it's pretty much a straight policy. The minute I came back on January 2nd, 2007, presenting as Michelle, I could use a women's restroom. And if anyone had issues, the global diversity person or team lead was the person to go to and not me. My transition went flawlessly. My transition plan never came out of the envelope in my desk.
Really? You know, you brought the next issue I wanted to get to, and that is your coworkers. And that obviously went very, very well with you. I guess, AJ, that doesn't always work that way, I'm sure.
There are sometimes challenges. But, for example, if the employer wants to make sure that there are not challenges in the workplace and don't want to end up in a courtroom with our other guest, then they're going to make sure that they have these policies and procedures in place.
Right. Okay. Yeah, Jessica, with regard to this, what is the responsibility of the other employees? I mean, are they in a situation where they could be liable somehow for a failure to accept the coworker who's transitioned?
The issues that affect the coworker are exactly the same as we would see in any other protected class, that you want that coworker to not create a hostile work environment and not do anything that is going to be perceived as discriminatory against the transitioning or transgender employee. For example, what I see and what I teach in training is to avoid passive-aggressive comments or activities such as failing to include your transgender colleague on an email, failing to invite the transgender colleague to a meeting. That could be perceived as discriminatory by the coworker or a supervisor, and a supervisor in Missouri could be strictly liable.
So what would happen then if this did happen? What would the next step be? I mean, did we go right to a lawsuit, or do we go to H&R, have a conversation? What goes on?
Hopefully the latter, yeah. In that if the transition, the employee feels that there has been some inappropriate or unwelcome conduct, they should be invited or welcomed to make a complaint with their HR professional, and that complaint should be investigated in the same way any other workplace or employee relations issue would be investigated. And the other guests alluded to having your policies in place. And we are seeing more and more incorporation of transgender discrimination into basic EEO policies, so everybody knows what the expectations are and where to go. That's the most important thing. Where to go when you do feel that you have been a victim or have been treated without the proper respect.
Michelle, you've not felt that you've been exposed to any of that?
No, I really haven't. I have had discussions with some people who have had very strong religious beliefs, but we can work together. And all we're really looking for is the ability that works not affected. It's never in anyone's idea to change someone's basic beliefs, but the minute you walk through the door, there's a certain amount of professional behavior that's expected. And up till now, I've gotten that. People do screw up my name every once in a while, and sometimes, even though it's been years, sometimes they'll screw up a pronoun. I personally don't take offense to that, but I do know a lot of transgender individuals where those are very, very touchy.
What do you feel is your responsibility in all of this? We've talked about employers and we talk about coworkers. What is your responsibility?
Well, my responsibility is to be the best employee I can for Boeing. And I believe that, in fact, I may be a better employee now because I'm totally out and open than when I was hiding my true identity before transition. I try to give the same respect that I expect out of everybody else around me.
You mentioned the restroom a moment ago, and I don't want to belabor this point, but as you indicated, it's something that comes up all the time. How big a deal is it?
It hasn't been a big deal inside businesses, that at least the larger businesses. It seems to make public opinion much bigger deal. I have been in, even before I transitioned, I had been in women's restrooms across the country. You really go in there to use the bathroom. I mean, and there's other laws in place to take care of all the fears that people have. I did, for the first week, since there was a single-use bathroom literally outside my office, use that for a week to let people kind of get used to the fact that I was just there. Because, you know, it's a big change to walk out the door looking like AJ and come back the next day looking like Michelle.
AJ, any thoughts about that? Not about what you just said, about this other issue that people get hung up on something like that.
Well, I think that, quite honestly, we didn't hear quite as many of the arguments about the bathroom issue until just the last couple of years. Our opponents have really used that more as a wedge issue. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about the bathroom, when you talk about going to the bathroom, that's an uncomfortable topic, period. And so it plays on that uncomfortableness that's the underlying aspect and then capitalizes on that to create fear. And when we can try to have the we've tried to inoculate certain communities, for example, Springfield, Missouri. We had a ballot initiative down there to protect the non-discrimination ordinance that had been passed. And while we did lose that in Springfield, Missouri, we only lost by a very small margin at the ballot. And the bathroom argument never really fully took hold because we had inoculated the community quite a bit talking about the bathroom issues and that this was a boogeyman argument. Yeah.
What are some of the other wedge issues, as you put it?
Well, I think right now the other big issue is around religious liberty. And it puts two strong contexts for us in this country, the two beliefs in our country, that we believe in religious liberty, but we also believe that we don't in our hearts discriminate. And you're putting those two at odds with one another. Mm-hmm. I don't truly believe that they are at odds with one another. They can coexist quite peacefully, and they have for decades, for centuries. Yet this is a way in which many politicians are sort of playing up this, again, boogeyman argument.
Jessica, what about in business? Is religious concern a valid issue? If I'm an employer and for some religious reason I don't want to do business or have an employee who's transgender, can I get away with that?
I have been asked this question before. It's a difficult one. I don't know if I can articulate as eloquently as AJ did, but employers do struggle with their business necessity and their religious beliefs. We have seen in court cases, Hobby Lobby, for example, and other instances where the religious beliefs have been able to take hold over some of the business decisions that are going to affect medical benefits and other issues affecting the employees. It's a difficult and evolving one, and I would imagine we'll see more litigation and matters before the Supreme Court.
Well, we've talked about coworkers and we've talked about employers. What about in those situations in which customers come into a situation and are uncomfortable or unhappy with what they find? If there's a transgender person waiting on them, for instance, how does that dealt with? Does the law speak to that in any way?
We counsel employers that the employees that are servicing the public should not be adversely affected. Certainly, if a customer wants to complain or raise an issue, they have the ability to do that. But we do not want to see employers take any negative or adverse employment action on that employee, for example, removing them from a customer service type job performance or job. I would advise against doing that.
That's something, Michelle, that you would not be exposed with in your job at Boeing, take it.
Yeah, although I was working with a large military contingent when I did transition, most of them were pretty good about
most
it.
Most of them.
Most of them. I mean, a couple alpha male pilots, you know, took a little bit, but they finally came around. At Out and Equal, we suggest are part of the transition plan for employees that have high customer contact, you know, especially things like, say, financial planning type people, is to put together a communications plan so that their clients aren't surprised the next time they come in.
One other issue I wanted to get to, as time will allow, and we're running out of it, is the question of unintended discrimination. I see that phrase has popped up with some of the research I've done here. And I suppose that has to do with such things as misuse of pronouns, as you suggested before, that sort of thing. What has your experience been along those lines?
I mean, my biggest problem is telephone calls. My voice is a little bit lower. It's not like most women, although so I start phone calls with, hello, this is Michelle Smith, to give them ideas. And actually more than occasionally, they'll come back with sir sometime during the conversation. So,
are you offended by that?
I'm not, because I do understand what's happening. I never have that issue when I'm in person with somebody. So when they can put a visual in place with the voice, you know, it's okay because that jives with them. But like I said, a lot of people who know you for a long time have a hard time changing pronouns. Okay. My dad cannot say Michelle and she in the same sentence.
Really?
Okay. Mm-hmm. One or the other, he's perfectly fine with. He tries to use them both simultaneously. He just can't seem to do it.
And Jessica, any thoughts on this unintended discrimination, if you will?
There is unintended discrimination, and I call it passive aggressive, or you're just not thinking. When in our training with employees and coworkers, we tell them to avoid making unnecessary statements, although they think it's something that's very nice. For example, we advise against saying, "Well, you'll make a very attractive woman," or "you were fine as a man." This is a very individualized personal issue, and coworkers should avoid making unintentional comments if they can.
How long does this counseling take typically? Is it something that's done in a day, a week, or over an extended period of time?
counseling for employees and employers. It's a process. I think the first place we start is with the paper, with the documents, to make sure policies and procedures are up to date, to make sure, as Michelle said, you have your transition plan, and then incorporate it into your annual training, just as you would sexual discrimination and harassment. We strongly recommend you include LGBT issues. So hopefully people are doing it on an annual basis, if not more often.
We're going to have to end it right about there. But Michelle, I'll give you and AJ a chance for a final thought if there's something you'd want to say.
I just want to thank you so much for bringing this issue up to the forefront. Especially here in St. Louis, this does not get talked about as much as you see in a lot of other cities and even now the national stage.
AJ?
I would just add that, as we know, marriage wasn't the end-all be-all for the LGBT community, and we still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the way we started this discussion, and we'll have to end it that way. Jessica, let's thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Michelle Smith, thank you so much for being with us. Great to see you. And A.G. Bockelman, good to see you once again. We're going to move along now, and the question is, what lessons do bees have for you and me? We'll find out in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.